Welcome to VHTB. This is your guide to talent, culture, and the finance side of the space startup ecosystem. My name is Justice Killian, and I'm a partner at Space Capital. I'm joined today by Brian Majeure at Ad Astra Talent Advisors. Hey, Brian.
Hey, how you doing?
And Matt Jurtson, who leads Better Everyday Studios. Hey, Matt.
Hey, how's it going?
So today I wanted to dig into a topic that's near and dear to my heart, great engineering cultures and how leaders can replicate these cultures in other organizations. We've seen some of the storied names in US engineering, like Boeing, facing a real sort of its demise due to the loss of that, engineering culture. And we've seen, new companies step in to fill that gap and really sort of define what excellence in engineering and culture look like today with companies like SpaceX. And so I think it's incredibly important, and, it's something really interesting to dive into. So guys, would love to get your, first take on, what defines a great engineering culture.
It's interesting that you mentioned Boeing. I actually grew up in the Seattle area, and so I know a lot of people who even worked there when the transition happened. A lot of people point back to, when they merged with McDonnell Douglas, and there was just a lot of changes there. I think this engineering culture, and it comes up in a lot of places. I'm sure both of you are aware. A few months ago, there was the big thing about founder mode. And that whole discussion, and I think a lot of, you mentioned engineering culture, founder mode. A lot of this stuff, to me, focuses on this importance of technical ability, in many ways. I think that's a big part of it. Is when you think about the company as a whole and the success of a company as a whole, where is the importance of technical ability? And it's actually interesting. I was having a discussion with a friend of mine who's worked at a number of these kind of new, really successful engineering focused startups. And we were talking specifically about leadership, but I asked him the question of what makes a good leader or even a good employee in your settings? When you're having this tremendous success, what's the secret sauce? And he answered so quickly, you could tell, he didn't have to think about it at all. And he just clearly said, attitude, ownership, technical ability. And so it was this attitude of, we believe things are possible. We see challenges, not problems, like that kind of stuff. It's all about, we can solve things. Ownership is, you're never going to say, that's not my job. It's a true, you're looking for problems for you to go to try to solve. And then that technical ability of, you know what's going on. And I think when we think about Boeing, when we think about other companies, I think those are some of the things that start to fall off. And often that happens as a company scales. And so the ownership isn't there. Things feel less solvable or achievable, and maybe we don't hold technical ability as
that's really good, Matt.
Paramount.
And I think there's also, there's technical ability at the engineering level and at the more employee individual contributor level. And then where does that start to be less and less important as you go up the leadership tree, right? I think that something that SpaceX has done time and time again that was a bit unique was they're almost always hiring or promoting into leadership their strongest technical contributors. And of course there still needs to be some amount of engineering people leadership skills there too, but that has been a hallmark of how they promote is by your engineering performance. And I don't think the same thing is true in other organizations. I think this is it has a lot of upside in the way that keeps engineering at the forefront of the company, but it is also interesting to talk about the downside of that. And a big part of where training comes in too is a lot of times these engineers aren't quite as, they're kind of thrown into the fire and don't necessarily understand the people part and like how to be successful in this like very different role. And so I'm curious to get your guys' thoughts about that kind of track as well.
Well, I mean, from my perspective, I think it starts very early on in the company. And so, the founders actually, having an engineering foundation and valuing, creating a organization that values the engineering mindset and puts that, at a high priority. And, I think, as companies grow, I think people can sort of end up being seen as replaceable. I think, that is a real mistake when it comes to particularly hard tech companies where, engineering talent and the lessons learned to develop that engineering talent, that hardware engineering, and that specialized talent, there's only a handful of people in the world, one, that maybe have that specialization, and two, have actually, flown and demonstrated that hardware in space. And so, nurturing that talent, preserving it, empowering those individuals to make decisions at the front line. I think SpaceX has been really great at that. Elon himself embracing sort of that chief engineering role and really folk when he comes in, those are some of the priorities that he sets. I think a lot of other companies can sort of learn from that. I would be curious to get your guys' take, with engineers leaving SpaceX. SpaceX has been so great at sort of incubating and fostering and building that within the organization. It's got a long track record now. It's scaled up significantly. Working with, new founders, setting up companies, bringing some of those SpaceX principles into their environments. I think I've seen some successes. I've seen some sort of challenges in doing that. I'd be curious to get your take. Where do you think, setting up a new organization, bringing some of that engineering first sort of mindset, how do you build that into the culture and who's done it well, who's, and how can you, set that up for success?
I love how this brings up something that I wanted to talk about before. I think when it comes to whether it's scaling a culture or moving a culture, one of the things that I think people forget about is properly defining what that culture is. Actually, just a week ago, I was talking to an engineer who had left SpaceX and started another company, and he went and started that company with a bunch of ex-SpaceXers, and he thought so much was just going to naturally port over, and it didn't, and it actually went really poorly in this other company. And I think we think about having an engineering first mindset or whatever big picture like culture term you want to use isn't enough. You have to really peel back the layers on whatever you think that tagline is into what are people doing differently? Like, what are the questions that people are asking? We've talked a little bit about this on a past episode where a lot of companies, as they start to scale, they bring in people from Amazon. And very often those people from Amazon bring in meeting memos where all of a sudden they want everybody to write memos before the meeting that we're all going to sit and read before it. And sometimes it work doesn't it sometimes it doesn't, and sometimes that's not the right thing to move, but it's clearly a specific behavior that you have. I always remember, this would be interested to get your take on this, Justice. I remember listening to a talk. I think it was Marc Andreessen was talking about Andreessen Horowitz. It might have been them, it might have been somewhere else, but they were saying how they really wanted to have a founder's first mentality. The problem is every VC firm on the planet says they are founders first, that they care about the founders, but because of the nature of the relationship, we have the money, you need the money, it doesn't always go. And so, and again, whatever firm it was, they said, okay, so in order, the way we are going to make this idea of being founder first actionable is we are going to say, we're going to define that by, are you on time for meetings with founders? And when you are meeting with a founder, we're going to fine you $100 every minute that you are late. And so it was like a very clear behavior that they measured and then reinforced. And so when I think when it comes to moving culture like that, that's the first step. It's like a clear definition of what
yeah, so that is
behavior
Andreessen
is that
Horowitz.
You want to
That's
see.
pretty funny. And it, just to tie that off real quick, it was an acknowledgement that the founder's time is the most precious resource that there is. And, you know, we will always respect that, right? And so it's like putting, you know, the investor as a support mechanism to the founder. And I think it, I mean, I think it's a really great example of how you do that effectively.
Yeah, and piggying back on that a little bit more, Matt, I love what you're saying about behaviors, and we got to be specific about what is the culture. I agree completely. You can't just say, oh, we're all coming from SpaceX, so we're going to have like a SpaceX culture. There's still so much blank space and like what that could look like. There's still so like such a grand spectrum of what that could be. We're partnering with a bunch of early stage startups with SpaceX founders, and the cultures couldn't be more different across them. And when we're hiring for them and asking them, okay, what do you want your culture to be? What do you want in your talent? The more the company has like actually defined that. And it might be culture statements, or it might just be being very specific in their answers. But if it's very vague, you're not thinking about it enough, and you're going to end up with clashes and issues. So I think like, okay, we can set some, we can maybe say, oh, SpaceX is some sort of gold standard, maybe, I don't know, but like we can then now define more specifically. And we, the companies that have great culture that we work with, it's not the, again, it's not the same from across all these companies, but it's defined and they're clear about it. They communicate it well, and they make sure that they're hiring for people that actually match that. And I think that's what's really important, is being very clear and actually matching that with the people you're hiring.
And I think what you just said there is really important, is that you know you've defined your culture well enough when you can say yes or no to things. Like you, it's you use it to decide actions on a day-to-day basis, or decide, is someone going to work here well? If you can't make it actionable in that way, then it's not gonna work. I also wanted to bring up the importance of kind of some of the other stuff, is like a company starts to grow, of things like org design. I think in a lot of the companies that we all work with, it seems natural that people managers are also individual contributors. But that's a choice. And I've actually talked with HR leaders about this. And there's one HR leader in particular who said he believed that the fundamental problem that is pervasive across companies these days is that we make managers also do individual contributor work. And that in his mind, like, no, we need to create, like, reinforce this idea that management is this like really important thing, and you just do manager stuff. But if I map that on with most of what I'm hearing, you know, we started the discussion with that technical ability, that's wrong. Like, you shouldn't decide that. And you should intentionally say, no, managers, directors, VPs are going to have some level of individual contributor work so that they can stay grounded in the technical side of things. That's a decision that you can make as you're growing your organization.
So I was recently chatting with a younger engineer in one of our portfolio companies who had not worked at SpaceX, and he works under a manager who was at SpaceX for a long time. And I was just trying to get his opinion on, you know, what was different and what was being brought over to the organization. And I think this goes very specifically to your point. A lot of conversations that I've had, engineering talent has started as an individual contributor, mastered all of sort of the decision making, the building, has run the traps, has a track record of building and executing successfully, and as a path for growth, moving into a managerial role and supporting others to sort of problem solve and execute and build, you know, great technology, then becomes sort of a developmental path for them. And in that, to maintain that credibility, to show leadership, you know, oftentimes, you know, that manager will go do the hard work that nobody else wants to do. to show that it's important, to show that they are technically competent, and you should trust, when I'm making decisions. And those are, I think really, really important tools of influence and leadership to be able to have a successful, trusted engineering culture. And so this manager was taking that practice that he, developed and learned at SpaceX and applying it. And it was a powerful lesson for this young engineer that hadn't necessarily been exposed to that in some of the bigger companies that they'd worked with previously. So I would be on sort of the latter side of that, saying, it's really important to be able to do that hands-on work.
And I think the one kind of limitation or other side of that that I would say is, very often when we get promoted, we're always trying to do our last job because we knew our last job. We could do our last job well. And so this is also tying in, Brian, to the question that you asked about kind of training new managers. I work a lot with brand new managers. It's helping that transition from being a great engineer to a great manager. And I think that is the moment that it's really important to hang on to the individual contributor stuff. You still have to do those projects all the way up, but it is really important. And I think the place where you make the mistake is not using that moment to also clearly highlight being a manager is a new role. It is a new skill that you must learn, or else people over-index on the technical stuff because they know the technical stuff. And so then you get the, micromanagement, telling people, oh, my way or the highway. You're just always in there. You're overstressed because you're trying to do all the projects. And so it's maintaining that you have to have those projects so you maintain that technical ability, but still realizing that there's other elements as well. And so I
I think
think that balance is
pattern,
just what's critical.
leads all the way up to the CEO. I mean, I'm often working at seed stage with founders, highly technical. This might be the first time that they've ever led an organization. The earliest stages, they need to be technical. They need to build. They need to have an understanding to understand what quality is and ensure the product roadmap's going in the right direction. But very quickly at Series A, they're hiring people that should be as good, if not better than them, and need to step back and empower them to sort of take the reins and just keep everything sort of on the track within guardrails, right? And that can be a really hard, there's no on-the-job training for that. Like it is, you don't take it from past experiences. It's something that you have to sort of develop and learn and so. Yeah, I think that what you're talking about, that development from individual contributor to manager, is very true as you go all the way up to a CEO and end up further removing yourself from that, but still having to have authority and credibility in the decisions that you make. Well, I think this was great. I think that
Absolutely.
we touched on some really important topics here, some of the ways that culture can sort of fall off if it's not very well defined. Engineering culture in particular can fall off if it's not very well defined, if it's not valued by your senior executives, if there isn't a know-how to understand where the sort of the guardrails exist. And it is possible to replicate great engineering culture and take some of those lessons learned from gold standard companies like SpaceX and bring it into a new company. But it's not going to look the same. You have to be willing to adapt it to your culture that you're willing to define and proactively shape.
If
Yeah, I
I
mean,
may,
those were some of my big takeaways.
yeah, if I may add just one more piece to that last note, I think another key piece of defining the culture outside of like, oh, we're just replicating some other culture is you really need it to be able to stand on its own because you don't want to block people out that aren't coming from the same place. We need to say, oh, like some examples are maybe instead of saying, oh, we have a culture like SpaceX, maybe instead of that, you're saying, no, we rely on first principles thinking. We do rapid hardware iteration. We're very scrappy. We're things that are specific and not tied to something else because I've s worked with companies and talked to people that come from different cultures, and then like in the room. When people are making decisions about how to do something, they say, oh, well, this is how we did it at SpaceX. And like that is not a very productive way to support people outside of other cultures and actually define what you're doing there. So I thought that'd be a useful thing to mention.
Which is, it's funny that statement is even there, because that's a statement that you would never hear, or you're supposed to never hear at
Exactly.
SpaceX, right? It's never, this is how we did it. So
I think that's a great way to wrap it up, guys. This was fun conversation. Looking forward to the next one.